going on down there?
Ladies and gentlemen, come and catch a train with us here on WTF Prime Time! And I'm Vangelis here after a disc too slow error with my compatriots for the evening, sponsored by Pepsi Throwback, Gog Dog.
Hey, what's up?
Not much, not much. What do you think of memory errors?
I think it's weird that after 2 years, this is suddenly popping up every recording. But.
Yeah. It's even weirder for me when I'm sitting here watching it happen. But so are the breaks, as they say. I got that completely wrong. Them's the breaks. Also here with us today is Omegas Prime.
I didn't know we were sponsored by Pepsi. I'm here drinking a Coke.
Get out.
Oh, no.
I'm drinking water, which is a ingredient to Pepsi.
Water is a product of Coca-Cola when it is bottled and in the Aquafina brand name. So we've just lost
our corporate sponsorship. Not when it comes out of my
tap. What if Aquafina secretly is in your tap? Then what are you going to do about that?
Well, they can't be a sponsor if they're secret.
That's true. I hate them as a sponsor. They suck at what they do.
Yeah.
Also not here today is Aaron because he's feeling sick. So let's all hold out a candle for Aaron Smith.
Just making excuses.
Wish him a speedy recovery. He sent me a message on Twitter like 2 hours ago. He's like, "Hey, I'm not up for prime time tonight. Feeling sick. Make sure you mention the stripe on the trailer." Spoiler: there is a stripe on the trailer. We're going to talk to you about the newest episode of Transformers Prime, which was called Convoy. And there were no inexplicable Japanese Optimus Primes in this one. So the easy reference did not happen. Although technically, it's the easy reference that would have been much harder to implement, so that might be why.
We could have made the trailer look like Star Convoy.
Well, it kind of had a ridge thing on the top front, I guess. I don't know. I've watched the episode only once so far. I'm a bad episode discusser. This episode introduced a couple of new concepts and again introduced some new characters who I really hope will come back, at least one of them. So I think we could start off maybe by discussing that new character, which is Silas, TFW 2005's own Shibamura Prime. He's a very popular fan artist. And he is really into drawing robots and the ladies. So, Gog Dog, what are your thoughts on Silas?
And on top of that, he's also into terrorism, apparently.
Yeah, that's it. And he has scars.
Yeah, he must have gotten those. I haven't seen him since last BotCon, so like I need to ask him how he's been because it looks like he's been through the junk, if you know what I mean.
White hair.
Yes, I've seen him.
White hair. Yeah. Well, but to his credit, he now sounds exactly like Clancy Brown, and that's pretty cool.
That is. I heard a lot of people praising Clancy Brown. I admit I don't think I've ever watched anything with him in it, but the universal praise for "I think that was Clancy Brown" was coming from 360 degrees around me, so I will take their word for it that he has been in some good roles. I guess he played Lex Luthor.
Yeah, he played the DC animated continuity's Lex Luthor for about 12 some years and really owned that role.
Oh, that's a long time.
Yeah, he played it as long as Kevin Conroy was Batman, pretty much, and Mark Hamill was the Joker. Clancy Brown has always been the animated Lex Luthor to a lot of us, and he really owned the Lex Luthor role. Well, like many voice actors in that DC cartoon, he really owned the role and made it into something that, in my opinion, kind of transcended the comic book. So the thing that I really liked about him playing Silas is he's basically doing the Lex Luthor voice for Silas. So I'm hardcore into that. Also, if you've ever seen Highlander, he was the Kurgan in Highlander.
Yeah.
Oh, God, so, the Kurgan.
I never watched any of the Superman animated stuff. I was really into the Batman when it first came on when I was younger, but never crossed over to the Superman. But yeah, Silas and Mech. I think they have the potential to be really cool villains. We really didn't get much behind their motivation. On my first watch through, I kind of just gathered the fact that they were a group that just tried to appropriate high technology just for the sake of doing it. But I kind of, after watching it again, I kind of got the impression, because he said that, so he had the line about there's going to be a day when the New World Order will go head-to-head with the newer world order, and the side with the most advanced technology will win. And I get the impression that they have a motivation or a purpose or something that they're fighting for, mm-hmm. but right now they're just going about gathering the weapons before they start fighting their war. So I hope these guys get fleshed out, because I think they have the potential to be an interesting enemy. Silas himself seemed really cool. I liked the voice acting. Maybe it didn't. Hopefully, the people that watched the Superman stuff didn't get taken out of it from hearing a familiar voice, which can happen sometimes
when he starts. I was like, oh my god, Clancy Brown. And then, like, his first line, I was going, like, dude, it's Lex Luthor. And, he's even kind of bald-ish, and he's got a Lex mm-hmm. Luthor chin. And I was like, someone working on this must have liked him in Justice League and Superman. But, mm-hmm.
Yeah, he reminded me of someone else. And I don't think it was any role that he played, just a different character. And mm-hmm. I was trying to remember what it was, and I can't. Maybe I'll think of it later. But, I guess that has nothing to do with this episode, but I want to know what this guy is fighting for. Is it world power? Is it an ideal, or what? Because we didn't really get any of that, and that, which is fine, and it leaves mm-hmm. more to build upon later, and gives an excuse for the character to pop up again. But I really enjoyed him. You want to talk about Mech later? Or are we just talking about Silas right now?
You could branch out. I think, given that they were kind of a conjoined entity in this episode, they're kind of one and the same, I think, for discussion.
Yeah, and I guess even then, we really don't know that much about Mech either, but the dudes in suits were cool. I have to admit, they probably gave them all masks so that they didn't have to create individual face models for each one, I imagine. I thought the idea of the suits was cool. I think they were a little boring, maybe. I would have liked to seen something a little like, oh man, those dudes look cool. Like, I would totally want to fight for them.
Mouth vents, but, I think, would have been really cool. Like some kind of to finish off the facial mask. Like I mm-hmm. understand they're going for a very paramilitary look with very, very, very subtle and very understated. But I think, like, just given those goggles, like some kind of just mouth vent, as silly as it may look, would have finished off the look really well too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think the outfits for those guys fell a little flat, but I still thought that they were interesting as a group. Their cars were really awesome. It almost kind of reminded me of the opening. I think it's the opening scene from the original Fast and the Furious movie where they're all kind of hijacking the whatever it was. Was it a truck? It was a semi truck.
I still haven't seen the original Fast and the Furious.
Yeah,
which
well,
is bad.
Well, they all have these little. These I like little Vin Civics, Diesel. And they might even were they green? I don't remember.
I thought they were green. If you mean the Mech guys?
Oh no, I know the Mech guys are green. In the Fast and the Furious movie, they all drive up with Civics, and they're all colored the same. I can't remember if they were green or black. It's been a long time since that movie came out. I've only seen it, I think, the one time, but it started off very, very similar to each other, but the car designs were interesting, but yeah, I like the setup. I like Silas. I like him. I like the fact that he knew when to pull out, and his whole motto of never, or his rule of combat was never leave the enemy with the spoils. It was like, okay, you know, I know when I'm defeated, but I'm not going to let you just walk away with the weapon. And he seems to be very cool under pressure. Like he's not the type of guy that would lose his temper. He's cool. He's calm and collected. And he's always under control. I want to see more of this guy. And unlike a lot of human villains in the Transformers series, I think that he made a good first impression, and I welcome him back.
Yeah, I was really happy with how they didn't go over the top with him and Mech, but they also made them a realistic threat in terms of their potential, which I can go into after we finish talking about him. But like the way that they were delivered, especially with the tone of Prime, I thought really worked out. Admittedly, perhaps like they didn't do much, and as you said, it's an origin episode, so there's only so much room for them to do stuff. And I would also like to see them fleshed out, because I want to know, are they anarchists, or are they driven by some kind of altruistic, misguided goal, or what? Omegas, what about you? How do you feel about Silas and Mech?
I'm very positive towards Silas and Mech, though I will go one step more obscure than your Kurgan. And when I heard Clancy Brown, I'm on the Clancy Brown bandwagon, by the way.
Hell yeah. No, you were one of the first tweets to reply going like, yes, Clancy Brown.
Well, since I had watched the show more recently than the old Superman cartoon, the voice I had to get out of my head was Raiden from the old Mortal Kombat cartoon.
Oh, right! I forgot he was Raiden! And he was like a jovial Raiden in that cartoon.
Yeah. Which was kind of weird. So, I'm really looking forward to just hearing more of that voice, if only for future use of having, like, edited footage of Lex Luthor plotting to destroy Optimus Prime.
Yeah.
Just to, like, complete some fanboy fantasy in my head.
I am sure that if a few more episodes of Silas come out, that mashup will inevitably happen. Because a lot of people like Justice League, and a lot of people like Transformers. And he's doing the Lex Luthor voice, pretty much.
I know. Well, Clancy's a great voice actor, but he does have that voice.
Yeah.
When he is in a role, you can definitely tell it's him. Because, you know, Raiden and Lex Luthor and Cyrus, they all sound exactly alike.
He's got a very lovely dulcet tone.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. It's a one-trick voice, and I hate to say that to any really good voice actor, but it is just such a damn good voice.
Well, it's a voice. It's a one-trick voice, but in kind of, I think, the positive way, whereby it's a one-trick voice, but it's the voice that people want to hire. Yeah. Like, people write a character going, like, it would be great if Clancy Brown was voicing this guy.
Yeah.
So it's like,
it's the Tim Curry voice.
Yeah.
Like, where you want Tim Curry for this maniacal villain, you want Clancy Brown to play your cold, calculating villain.
Yeah, it's like he doesn't have to really audition for the part so much as he shows up and just is like, well, I'm Clancy Brown, and if you don't know who I am, I'm going to speak for you a little bit.
I once tried to kill Superman.
Yeah,
okay,
God
hired. I am big on them. I am very glad that there is a human element along the villains here, especially one that succeeds in being threatening without being over the top. Mm-hmm. Like, I know, like, that was a big advantage that Animated had, was introducing human villains that could pose a threat to a Transformer. And while this manages to do it without resorting to, you know, superhumans and going into the comic book territory, it does so on what almost seems to be a grander scale, because it, you know, human villains to this point have all been singular threats. You know, okay, we have Nanosec, who could be a villain to Bumblebee, but, you know, if there's more than just Bumblebee there, he's not a whole lot to handle. Whereas Mech seems very big, very ominous, and in a way more threatening than I would even call the Decepticons, because you don't know what they're fully capable of yet. I mean, this was basically a heist.
Yeah, they had, what, 3 cars, a helicopter, and less than 10 soldiers on hand.
Right.
You don't even, like I like that also it was left a little vague. I was like, is this the entirety of Mech right now? Is there an army at home, or is it going to be like, this is Mech right now, and then the next time you see him, he has 20 soldiers with him, and like a tank or something.
Yeah. Yeah, you can tell there's a lot of room to one up here and go bigger with Mech, which really, really, really makes me want to see this a little bit more often.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a great change of pace. I wonder why this stealth group and organization have matching identical green and black cars that came right out of Ben 10. Know why.
You got to be subtle.
I still think that this is some slight on Cartoon Network over the whole animated debacle. It's like, okay, we're going to have a bunch of cars that look exactly like your big show, and we're just going to tear them up every episode. those theories never bear out, though. much to my disappointment.
We'll see. The Ben 10 crossover will happen someday. The big thing about mech that I wanted to bring up, actually, aside from how much I was digging how they were done in this episode, is the potential that, I mean, it's heavily foreshadowed that mech may at some point dissect a Transformer, if not build their own Transformer analog. And the way I was looking at mech after that final scene of him, you know, scanning Optimus Prime, going like, we're going to figure out what makes you tick. I was like, ladies and gentlemen, this is our third faction for the series. It's Autobots, Decepticons, and mech. Like, that's what I hope. I'm sure that, like, the potential is also there for mech to side with either the Autobots or the Decepticons somehow. Or more likely the Decepticons. But they're presented as such a rogue element that I'd actually love it if mech was just another antagonist group that are not unified with the Decepticons in any long-term way. Like, they may even be antagonists towards the Decepticons as well, because they want to be the newer world order. And in terms of how that can also work into the merch, it'd be kind of neat if you know, if mech ever developed mech suits or something, that could be a cool kind of change of pace figure for the Prime toy line whenever it happens. And then you could have, like, you know, Autobot figures, Decepticon figures, and mech figures. And I don't know.
This is all going to turn around when you find out that Silas's real name is Miles Mayhem. And they reverse engineered Transformers into mask vehicles.
I thought you were going to say his real name is Silas Arkaville.
No, I wouldn't go in that direction.
I mean,
I'm giving you fuel here because this is how the Stealth Force line lasts.
Absolutely. I mean, like, if this is going to be a way to continue Stealth Force after the movie heat dies off and Prime continues, that would also be great. Mech just seems like a very easy new element to insert into Transformer storytelling without feeling too foreign.
I like the parallels too that Prime was drawing between the early days of the Autobot Decepticon conflict and the evil that can lurk within the human race, and how Fowler was saying, like, oh, well, we would have been fine. We wouldn't have to even worry about this unless your Decepticon's around. And Prime had said that, well, you're saying that there's no evil on your planet. And, of course, that was just some plot-based foreshadowing as well. Mm-hmm. But I really like the ending of it on how Prime – because Prime has never encountered a human enemy before. It's always been he's fighting the Decepticons and the humans are just the dudes who live on the planet. They've never been a threat. And his realization that they are a threat and the humans have Decepticons of their own. He actually said that they have Decepticons in human skin. I thought that was a really cool realization of him, because he didn't see the difference. He just sees you have these idealists who will resort to violence and power mongering in order to build up the forces for an upcoming war. Mm-hmm. And how he drew that same parallel to Megatron was very interesting to me, I think.
And that parallel, saying that the guy, when he said he sounds a lot like Megatron sounded before he started the Great War, that was part of what really got me hoping that mech remains a third party and not they don't end up getting swallowed into being just allies for Decepticons or something like that. Because I'd love it if that's like a mounting conflict throughout the series, that you have the Autobots, you have the Decepticons, and you have mech, who are their own threat to, you know, and that these three parties are all threats to each other. It makes, to me, the black and white story a lot less black and white.
I agree completely, and I would like to even see mech attempt to take the Decepticons head on. Mm. Like, that, imagine that. Like, there's an episode where it's just the mech versus the Decepticons. Like, that would be
interesting. You could make a case for that. I mean, if they want to reverse engineer Transformers, you'd get no easier than, you know, abducting an Erraticon.
Oh, definitely. And that could even lead to, like, an Erraticon episode or something. Like, having this third party really opens up a lot more roads than having just the Autobots and the Decepticons. I think that's always been the intent behind human villains, to have that road opened. And like you guys said, it's great that mech is such an effective human villain force compared to, like, you know, when G1 had basically just Dr. Arkaville and Carbomia. In animated, you know, animated was playing much more of a superhero, supervillain type of story. So with Prime being a lot more of a darker tone and a lot less fantastical, which is a funny thing to say, given that it's Transformers. It really works thematically, I think. And is this a picture that you just sent me from Fast and the Furious?
Yeah, they were black, but it's very, you can see.
Oh yeah,
like
yeah.
It's the cars, the uniform cars all surrounding the semi truck.
This looks like a shot from the show, even like this looks.
Yeah,
like a
yeah, that's why I'm really convinced it was somebody had the opening of the movie in mind when they did this.
That's kind of cool. Something you guys mentioned also about Fowler having that line about, you know, if you guys hadn't come to our planet, everything would be fine. That actually was the first thing I really wanted to bring up for discussion, which was the whole notion of Fowler when he gets shot down pretty much, and he's all like, "You guys got to help me out." He immediately assumes it was Decepticons, which at first I was thinking, you know, that was kind of funny because I was like, "That's more Fowler being a crazy dude." But I think that was also perhaps a slightly weak way of explaining that this kind of antagonistic force and terrorism had not been seen from humans in some time if a government special agent immediately assumes it's Decepticons and not some kind of human force. Like, between that and, you know, Prime going like there are now Decepticons in human skin, and this whole thing of going like they're humans, like it, I would have liked it, I think, if the episode had communicated a bit more as to when such threats from humans became a non-factor and how that made these guys such a big new thing. Like, I felt a little bit lost in how they popped up.
I thought maybe that was just a character flaw in Fowler
himself. Yeah.
Because just because, and to be fair, in the miniseries, he was shot down and captured by Decepticons and subsequently tortured. Mm-hmm. In the Skyquake episode, he was almost shot down by Skyquake, and in this episode, he was shot down again. So the first thing he thinks is Decepticon. So, I mean, I understand exactly what you're saying, and you're totally not wrong at all. But from his perspective,
oh, absolutely, yeah.
Like the last two, three, four times he was attacked in the air was directly by Decepticons coming for him. So he could easily have made a quick judgment of damn, this is happening again. So, but yeah, I think you're right on that. But I took the whole humans haven't been a threat until now more as from Prime's perspective, because these are still aliens to him. He hasn't really gotten to know many of them, and even the human conflicts and such have been literally not even on his radar or of any consequence to him. Period. And now that there are some that know they exist and are interested in them and the technology they have, and even dissecting their own bodies, that was, I think, Prime coming to the realization himself more so than Fowler. But yeah, I mean, I agree with everything that you said.
Yeah, it's just it was the vagueness of the context was, I think, like, I was trying to think of things that I felt were a little lacking in the episode, and that was really the one that came out to me, was like, the context is, again, it's something that could also be explained, you know, as soon as the next episode, even. So it's definitely still not something I can really say is like, this was definitely poor, because we're not far enough into the show yet. I just wanted to throw in, I thought it was funny that once again, Fowler's like, "I crashed my plane." We cut to see what he looks like, and he's strapped in his business suit, just chilling, no helmet. He's like, "Yeah, I crashed my plane again. Didn't need a helmet, though, because I'm a badass." Omegas, how did you feel about Fowler and or the context of human threats?
I don't know. It seems a little strange that, this would be, like, the first human event of this kind. Mm. Of course it's not. You know, this is just Prime. Even though we did eventually find out that they were slightly aware that there were alien robots on the planet somehow.
Yeah, yeah.
So they were very, they were very much the first threat that the Autobots would ever encounter. I did find it just as hilarious that the first thing Fowler thinks of when he gets shot down is, well, a Decepticon did it.
Yeah.
Which I can understand. Gog made a great point there. I don't know. I mean, it was interesting to see the reaction from Prime to the fact that a human could be threatening.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, again, just, you know, like I said about this, I am really looking forward to the future interaction, or if there's any other groups or that would be similar to this. Like, you know, if we can have one human based villain, you know, I'm eager to see if they can do something else with it. Mm-hmm. You know, if there's more than one way than just be technological with a bunch of big guns to still be threatening to an Autobot.
Oh, definitely. And I think it really helped having that whole dissection angle hinted at, because that's, you know, that's the worst thing that can happen to a primary character in Transformers, is he gets captured and pulled apart to see how he works, because that's pretty
Isn't
hideous.
That right, Cliff Jumper.
Yeah, poor Cliff.
Yeah, or IDW Sunstreaker.
Yeah, Sunstreaker.
I mean, the pulling apart is actually the part I liked, is everything that happened afterwards up until someone else started to get their hands on that. That bugged me. But let's try another talking point. Gog, do you have one you'd like to bring up?
Yeah, let me look at my notes here. I'll pull away from plot for a minute, and I will say I was pleasantly surprised of the terrain that they were in. We finally got away from the desert and generic cities, and we saw mountains and trees and caves and all sorts of stuff, and it looked good.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that this is a sign of things to come and not just an exception to the rule. So
it almost makes me wonder if, like, knowing how time crunched the development of the show has been, maybe, like, the last two episodes were done, and then as they were moving into doing this one, maybe a part of, like, the train was written in, of course, but maybe it was kind of like, we'll do two episodes where we can just keep using the desert to give you guys time to build us the mountains and the train tracks and the caves. Like, I'm just wondering if maybe that was this episode timed with the resources being completed, even.
Yeah, and even, I mean, now that they have the trees and stuff modeled, I mean, they can easily create new set pieces and use the models over again, so it's not like you're gonna be like, that's the tree from this episode. took me out of the episode completely.
So I recognize that branch.
Yeah. So it's I don't know. Nothing overly epic, but it was, I thought that it was a very nice change of pace from aesthetically from previous episodes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. If there was one little faltering in it, is that, you know, given that it's mountains and whatnot, the palette was still fairly brown for the outdoors, but that's also the region that they're in. They haven't had reason to go to a rainforest or anything quite yet, but I think like this, it's a good sign for future episodes that they're working towards varying the environments. Like, I mean, we had an Arctic environment as well a couple episodes ago, so that helped too. Omegas, how about you? You got anything you want to bring up?
Let me see here. I'm going. My list is a little bit disorganized because I literally watched like half of the episode for the second time, taking notes, you know, during pre-show prep. One thing I really liked about this episode was being a Transformers series to actually see a really cool chase sequence and like an old school like highway heist.
Yeah, it was a nice like, as an action piece, it was a lot different than just having them transform and start fighting.
Yeah, because I think a lot of times the vehicular element of the characters is completely lost. You know, that's one of my big complaints about most of the video games, where the vehicle mode is mostly for getting from point A to point B a lot faster, where you don't really take advantage of it the way you can. So this time, to actually see an action episode focused around that, really kind of just, it made me happy. You know, like, just to see that side explored, and to see the Autobots can handle themselves when they're not able to transform into a robot.
And to the show's credit, by maintaining this whole story element of the Autobots are trying to remain undercover and not be seen by the general human populace, it adds in a legitimization for why they wouldn't just turn into robots and flip over all the green cars, because that would utterly break their cover. So they're like, you know, we got to don't transform unless it's absolutely necessary, and eventually it became necessary. But it does help allow for that kind of stuff, and it helps enforce the vehicle modes. But I think it helps also that since they're working in tandem with a character like Fowler, it doesn't feel like they're stuck in vehicle mode and they can't talk. Like, they're still able to talk and communicate quite freely. So it's finding a nice balance between presenting them as living organisms and letting them have a reason to stay in vehicle mode and have these kind of sequences.
Yeah, I also really like the fact that they were, I mean, Mech was basically a non. They were pretty much an, even though they were they. Let me think of how I want to word this. They expected it as just being a nondescript undercover convoy transporting this weapon. So when they see like, oh, well, there's a sports car and there's a truck and everything, they're just disguised. They're professional drivers disguised as whoever. So they just think of them as just basically undercover military trying to get this out without raising any attention. But I like the fact that the Autobots were still able to completely shut them down. Mech didn't even come to be close to successful until the Decepticons showed up and had to completely distract them. They're basically in a fight. They think that the Dingus has been safely sleight of hand transported away, and it wasn't until the Decepticons showed up and distracted them where Mech basically realized, oh, well, we've been played, while they're distracted, we're gonna go do our business. It wasn't like Mech showed up and it's like, oh, well, the Autobots are powerless in their vehicle mode, so and they're like, oh, we'll shoot their tires out because they're a car, get it? The Autobots were holding their own against these humans that weren't expecting it, and so I like the fact that they, even though they felt like their hands were a little tied, they were still completely professional and skilled in what they were doing in their vehicle modes and were completely held Mech off with little to no problem. So even though they weren't able to transform, and as Bulkhead said, his fists were tied or whatever, they still were treated as being successful warriors in their vehicle mode. So,
well, I liked all the lines that the Mech guy in who was driving the copter kept dropping about, like, these aren't civilian drivers. And then and RC, the one little touch I actually really enjoyed in relation to this is when RC popped out of the back of the trailer and totally wrecked that one car.
Yes.
She had the holographic driver still up, because I was worried. I was like, wait, they're going to see this like motorcycle flying around on its own. And it's like, oh, no, wait, holographic driver's up. It's just like they hired a ninja on a motorcycle to put in the back of the truck.
RC totally killed at least one person in that.
Yes. Yeah.
Because somebody mentioned that to me, and I was like, really? And I went back and watched it, because there were two or three, I think there were three cars that flipped over completely, and most of those, the drivers, you could see them still inside fine, but that one car that exploded, it just flipped and blew. So that driver is wearing some crazy body armor, that dude is dead.
Yeah,
it's kind of funny, because the whole issue of life and death, like, in every episode, and okay, counting the miniseries as a single entity, every episode has either had someone die or someone come very close to dying to the point where they accepted their death. And in this case, it just happened to be a human instead of a Transformer.
That's something I noticed about that scene, because I guess just watching all the cartoons I end up doing, I always notice like how they avoid death and such, so the whole episode, you're watching, okay, they horribly flip these cars over, but they're still crawling around, they're crawling out the windows. But when Fowler pulls the guy off Prime and holds him out one-handed over the road, going like 90, 100 miles an hour, and the guy hits the tree with a sick thud.
I was going to ask about that part.
Good Lord!
The show is really, I kind of like that the show is also not making a big deal about it. They're just kind of like, yeah, it's happening.
I love the reaction to him. It's like boom, and Fowler is like, oh, dang, nope, back to my seat, just nothing.
I also like the follow up line, something like, you should learn to take better care of your hostages.
Right,
that gave me a chuckle too. I got totally distracted now. Is it my turn? Because I do have something I'd like to bring up. It's very brief. But it was kind of, I think it was Random Factor on Twitter who alerted me somewhat to it and got me thinking about it before I watched the episode. It was either Random Factor or Wraithnor. I can't remember who. they were both mentioning stuff about the episode to me. But when the kids were in the train car and you know, Miko pulls out the axe and stuff, I was more marking out when Jack pulled out a fire extinguisher, because I was like, you don't know what this kid can do with a fire extinguisher.
That is one of my bullet points, yeah.
Yeah, like of all the things to pull out, Jack's like, what's okay, what, a fire extinguisher? I wiped out a million scraplets with one of these. And I was like, I bet you if it came down to it, he probably would have killed one of those soldiers with that fire extinguisher. Like, if they ever make a Transformers Prime video game that involves any kind of human levels, I want it to be Jack with fire extinguisher versus... whatever.
Yeah, and it wasn't it. Somebody had to have written that, and the fact that they gave Jack a fire extinguisher twice now as a weapon against impossible odds. Someone had to have chuckled when they're like, "Well, we're gonna give Miko the axe. What are we gonna give Jack? Oh, give him the fire extinguisher again."
I'm looking forward to some more. Like, I hope that it keeps happening now and then. Because I think that would be one of the, like, especially if it remains completely unspoken, like he just pulls out fire extinguishers and they never bring it up. Like, I think that would be the best.
The weird thing was, I saw that same scene and I kind of went the opposite direction, because Miko was the first to grab weaponry, and it just cracked me up to see a 15-year-old girl immediately reach for an axe to hack people up with.
I was trying to remember if she's used a fire axe in a previous episode, but I can't remember clearly, because I know that Raph had used a crowbar, right, when he killed that scraplet.
Yeah.
I'm trying to come up, like, how many times have the kids, like, wielded blunt or dangerous sharp weaponry? And it's kind of fun.
Yeah.
To be fair, they need an equalizer.
It is true. One day Miko's gonna get to cut loose with a chainsaw or something, and then everything's gonna get awesome. Gog, have you got another point you'd like to bring up?
The music in this episode.
Waiting for that one.
Yeah. I think the music up to this point has been pretty much kind of the same thing. The symphonic strings, various themes, both kind of ambient and full on theme based pieces. But they really mixed it up in this a lot, and I went from being completely uninterested in the soundtrack for this series to I want to buy the early own the soundtrack of this just based on I would pay money for the soundtrack just to this episode alone. I really liked it. There was still a lot of strings, but there were several times where they mixed it up with just full on mood based electronic pieces that sound like it came straight from Jack Wall out of Mass Effect, or even maybe something that would have played in the background in the Tron movie. And I'm not, you know, I'm not saying that it's necessarily on par with that, but it was still really good, and I hope that we get more of this, because yeah, the string and the symphonic stuff is cool, but mixing it up like this, it really helps set the mood, especially when they're doing like the whole train sequence where they're in the dark and you get the dun 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 dun, and it really helps set the mood, and it felt like a modern action piece rather than just kind of bombastic generic symphony going in the background.
And I think that also really helps the series take a half step away from live action movie comparisons too. And I don't mean to imply that it's automatically poor that those comparisons can exist, but everything that the series does to be different from the live action movies, I think really helps it, because that, you know, the cartoon series are often what I think over the last couple of years we've looked to as being like, these are going to be different than the movies. They're going to be our change of pace. And having, like, even just having stuff like the music switch up a little bit and having Cullen, you know, acting and not narrating, all really helps Prime become something of its own. I keep reiterating this, but I think it really is also striking me, because the series seems so movie centric going in, like right down to the dark tones and the character designs, that it's these things all really help and are really winning me over on the series. And the soundtrack is going to be available. We found out that's something to look forward to. Omegas, do you have another thing you'd like to bring up?
Mm-hmm. Actually, I like the use of the kids in this episode. I mean, aside from, you know, murderous train sequences.
Mm-hmm.
Because they, one of the worries I always had about the series is finding ways of shoehorning in the kids for this series. But in this one, they actually had a use. They had a role. I really like that they had a way of, okay, we want to add a little bit of drama to the whole most cliche superhero rescue ever,
mm-hmm.
of stopping the train from going over the cliff or into the hole or whatever it is at the time. So I was happy to see that wasn't too badly shoehorned in, that there was a point to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like it had purpose and legitimization.
Yeah, and I love this moment afterwards where Jack and Miko think they're going to die, and Jack is trying to make this tender moment of friendship between the two, and she just steals his cell phone and basically reads out her will.
Yeah. I was worried for a second that it might get a little bit overly hammy on that moment, and I think that actually Miko's character, you know, again, listen to our first Prime Times and listen to me talking about Miko. I think that her character really helped out the sequence because it ran with it pretty well.
because okay, well, you know, when Jack is saying, at least we're in this together, which is a nice way of saying, at least you're going to die too.
Yeah.
He has this cliche line, let's face it. And, okay, she starts walking over slow and like, no, no, no. And then she just steals the cell phone. It's like, yes!
Yeah.
Okay. I like her now.
It kept things moving, too. Like, it didn't, because the primary worry outside of the hamminess was that also making things slow down in the midst of a train crash sequence, I think would have really played strange tricks with the pacing. And this helped it kind of run on the same track to a degree. Same track.
I agree with everything that TJ said. I like the way that the humans were used in this because they were used in, well, let's go in there because the Autobots are distracted. Someone has to go in there and stop them. So two teenagers teleport into the train, and they come to the conclusion that we are completely worthless and we should not have done this. And I really like that. And it's like, well, okay, well, we're going to die anyway, so we might as well at least try to fight or something. I think I had mentioned this before, but I have to say, I'll admit, I'm coming around a little bit on Miko. I enjoyed her character a lot this episode, and I have enjoyed her more in the episodes following the miniseries. I did not like her. I'm going to say right now that I'm just going to chalk that up to it was a little heavy-handed in the writing as far as trying to introduce her character and her personality traits. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe for me and some other people, that just came off a little too strong and obnoxious. But since they're done with the whole, we're going to establish who Miko is up front right off the bat, now that the character is just playing out those traits in everyday sequences, I'm enjoying that a lot more, I think. So I'm just going to give it up as saying that I think that I just didn't like the way that they introduced her in trying to get the point across of who she was and what she stood for. But I liked her in this. I almost wonder if they're going to go with any type of romance or anything between Jack and Miko one day. Everything that they did in this episode could be construed as completely platonic, just like we talked about with Prime and RC a couple episodes ago. But like the whole, like, when after Mech retreated and they came to the conclusion that the train was going to crash, like, or during that process, Jack was peeking out and Miko kind of hugged him and said, "Ooh, you're pretty fierce." So, and again, could have just been her saying her thing, or could have been like, oh, like maybe Jack isn't, maybe he is kind of a cool guy. But just like TJ said, that part was really funny. He's like, well, at least we're in this together or whatever. She just snatches the phone. So, yeah, probably, I don't think that was on her mind really at all. But it was a cool little moment between two characters And it showed Jack's kind of solemn personality versus Miko's whatever she is. But yeah, I actually enjoyed Miko quite a bit. And I liked her line too of Jack saying like what I said before, he's like, oh, we should not have done this. And then Miko saying, this goes into their personalities perfectly. Miko's line of, yeah, you're the one that's supposed to be talking us out of this. Because like they are looking at Jack and that's what I like, is they're recognizing what type of characters that these guys are, and the characters themselves know it. And they're saying like, Jack, you're the one with the head on your shoulders you had said in the pilot, why are we even here? I'm going home and to do my homework, because there's no way that alien robots need me at all. And Miko's like, what happened to that Jack that said that a few episodes ago?
Why did that Jack tell us to jump through a portal onto a moving train with a bomb on it that could go nuclear?
So yeah, and that's I like that Jack, and I like that in him. And a lot of people complained like, oh, Jack's just gonna go home and do his homework. But I like that naturalness in him. And here, this was Miko recognizing that, yeah, that's what we need in order to not get killed. You were right the whole time. Why did you not speak up? And that whole sequence really, I think I enjoyed that quite a bit. And because they're playing these as characters, but they're also flawed people who can make mistakes, and they're recognizing that. And it's not a typical cartoon of, well, the kids are going to come in and hit the magic button. Well, in the exception, and here's the human that we haven't mentioned yet, is Raph. And I hated the hacking sequence in this. It's like,
I didn't even know what he was hacking is the thing. He was just like, I'm using my computer to change the tracks because I can. Yeah.
And
I was like, oh.
And the mech guy, the mech guy says, hacker. And he apparently, in a helicopter, when you have a cluster of buttons, the top left button is the anti-hacker button. Because he pressed a button. He just pressed a button. And it shows a bomb with an explosion on Raph's screen. What was that? That was ridiculous. And so here you have Miko and her personality, and Jack and her personality being played near perfectly in this situation. And then you have Raph. How are we going to fit Raph in? Oh, let's just have him hack. And then how are we going to counter that? We'll have the helicopter pilot push the anti-hacker button. And that everything was great in that sequence except for Raph. Ugh. They need to find something that this character can do besides super unrealistic hacking and just and one button counters to it. Yeah. And Miko's whole line of, well, Raph is losing his touch. Yes, Raph, please come to the conclusion that you have lost your touch and find another hobby. Show some character growth, something to make me care about you, because it's just ridiculous every time he's featured, with the exception of the whole opening of the scraplet scene.
This one actually I felt almost played into that whole notion of the somewhat pathetic Raph, where it's like the moment his superhuman hacking skills stop working, they're like, oh man, he's losing his touch. And I was like, you're the same guys who told you snatched his game controller and went like, hey Raph, go away. And then Jack's all like, you want to play? And Raph's like, no, I'll just go and pretend I'm in the Arctic and the cargo holds. And now it's like, Raph's like, well, at least I can hack. Anti-hacker button. Oh, no. And then they come back. Miko's all like, hey, Raph, you lost your touch. He's like, I'll be in the cargo hold.
It's kind of upsetting me, because Raph was the one I thought made the most sense, because he could actually understand and work the human technology that the Transformers couldn't. Mm. And it actually gave him some purpose to being around them, you know, more so than Jack or Miko. And as the series has gone on since the 5-part mini, I have completely gone 180 on the two characters between, okay, I'm starting to like Miko a lot more, still wondering what she's doing there, but she's a character I enjoy watching now. Mm-hmm. Whereas Raph, I feel every time they do something with him now, it's a little bit more shoehorned, and it's a little bit more, you know, it's super science, we don't need to explain it.
I like, you know, even Ratchet was giving Raph some grief. Like, when his computer blew up, Ratchet's like, human technology. Right. And I was like, but there are kids on a nuclear exploding train right now. Is that your biggest worry? And he's like, yeah, well, Raph is stupid. Yeah. Seems to make sure he knows that.
Yeah, I can understand the whole sequence of, okay, there's a guy on a copter with Wi-Fi so good in a moving helicopter that he can actually click one button and completely block out Raph. You know, I can understand that because they are trying to get them off as, like, a super high-tech, you know, criminal organization.
Mm.
You know, but I have yet to run into the laptop with the, like, Norton firewall and, you know, virus, rebuttal button.
I'm still curious what kind of anti-hackery causes a remote laptop to explode myself.
Yeah. instantly cause the hard drive to spin out of control and completely shred in...
Like, that's where, for everything that I've said about mech being, you know, sort of nicely subtle and understated, that was kind of a strange little wisp of extreme super villainy of, we're going to remotely make your laptop blow up in response to your magic hacking skills, kid. By the way, bomb.gif. Enjoy it. Oh, boy. A Raph. Who knows? Maybe Raph next episode will suddenly come out of nowhere with a humdinger. I can't believe I just said humdinger. Omegas, am I on to you now? I've lost track again.
No, the kids were my point.
Kids were your point. Okay, it's back to me. I had one I was going to bring up. I was really actually surprised that the Decepticons, it helped out the plot, but I was actually taken by surprise when they cut to the Decepticons and even cut to Soundwave replaying that recording, because... I was so kind of fixated on what mech were doing that I actually forgot about the Decepticons entirely. I thought it was just going to be Autobots and humans. And the way that they introduced that whole, you know, Decepticon factor into it, I think really supports the idea that I'm trying to push for, which is like having like just to look at the layers of this one, it's Autobots, they clash with mech, Decepticons arrive, and then in the confusion, mech goes to do a thing. I mean, I don't want that to happen every time, but I think it makes it really interesting, because next time you could even have it like the Autobots are fighting the Decepticons. Mech shows up trying to just collect living robot samples. Both teams have to start fighting off this crazy, like, mech harvester thing. Or, likewise, mech shows up and distracts the Decepticons. The Autobots go and do something while they fight. Like, you get all these little, you know, it's very simplistic, but you get these options of how the 22-minute conflict can escalate and end. So I'm digging that. Also more Soundwave.
Absolutely, and I think that it's also neat because when you watch episodes like this, it's like, well, the Autobots are out in the open, and here they are fighting this other enemy. You would think that you're asking yourself, like, well, where are the Decepticons? I mean, they're off doing their own thing, but you would think that, like, well, this would be a perfect opportunity to ambush them while they're weak, and they kind of did that in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
So you realize that the Decepticons are watching the Autobots, so when they're out in a mission and they're distracted, they have no problem just coming in and trying to shoot them from behind, even though the plot really has nothing to do with them. And it's totally in character, and I enjoyed that quite a bit, because they could have just easily played this off as, well, it's just the Autobots versus the humans and just done that. But to throw the third faction into the mix, and it's just the three of them fighting each other and all having their own motivations, it totally makes sense. And yeah, the Decepticons kind of ended up being a non-factor anyway because of the Erraticons, just Viacons, whatever they're calling them now. I don't know, but they need to. And I got excited when we watched the pilot, because when we saw that first Erraticon fight with RC, and we're like, oh man, like, these dudes are actually pretty powerful fighters, and it wasn't until Bulkhead showed up, and it seems, and you could explain that as being like, well, the Autobots have been on Earth for years without any Decepticon contact, and they've just become sloppy. So when the Erraticons show up, and RC is like, oh man, maybe I haven't done this in a while. Because since then, she's been shown to be able to take one of those one-on-one fairly easily, or stand her ground fairly well, where, as in the pilot, she seemed to... And yeah, she was fighting two in the pilot, but it just seemed like since they have had that initial encounter, the Autobots have been able to stand their ground against the Erraticons a little more. Mm-hmm. Again, like I said, you could explain that away as just being like, well, they hadn't fought in a while, and now that they know that they are full-on in war with the Decepticons again, they are upping their training and making sure they're fully prepared at all times now. But, yeah, I kind of wish the Eradicons posed a little more of a threat, because they're
kind of becoming the robot trooper, the Trade Federation robots of Star Wars a little bit.
Yeah,
especially given that some people replied in the last thread telling me that apparently in the Clone Wars cartoon, the Trade Federation robots are exhibiting Eradicon-like levels of individuality, which is kind of cool to hear. Yeah. But I hope they don't end up like them, because they are also, the Trade Federation robots are some of the most pitiful robot foot soldiers in recent history. So,
on the other hand, the one did hit Prime in the face with the log and practically knocked him out.
That was so hilarious.
I guess that does kind of undermine my argument a little bit, but...
I was trying to figure out, because that seemed like a... That one did make me blink for a second, because I was like, that seems like a somewhat plot-driven level of strength, but then I was like, they made a big deal of showing that it was a tree that hit Prime in the face. So maybe it's just like, you know, Eradicon, his fist isn't all that tough, but when one of them is swinging a giant tree, then that impact straight to the head is enough to stun Prime.
They should just upgrade themselves with giant melee weapons now.
Yeah.
And the guy goes home and he's like, you know what? I knocked out Optimus Prime with a tree, guys. What are we using guns for?
just Prime just sitting there on the battlefield, just like slugging it away. He's getting hammered in the face by this, metal Eradicon fist, not feeling the thing. Then all of a sudden, boom! Wood! My one weakness! Down the cliff he goes.
Damn, he's the original Green Lantern. No one in the listenership's even gonna...
It wasn't that. Yellow.
No, there was another one. I swear that his weakness was wood, like Alan Scott. But don't hold me to that. Where was it? I had a follow-up for this one. But I forgot what it was. Oh, yeah, I remember. The other thing I really like about having these potentialities with the three-party story-driven thing, I hope that they don't always have it so that the third party shows up at the last minute to be the surprise, because then it'll stop being a surprise. But if they can maintain, having it be a surprise, I think it's great that no matter what's going on now in the episode, once you hit the big action sequence, it would be great if the viewer is left always sitting there going, like, I wonder if the other guys are going to show up to just throw this all out of whack. Like, if they always show up, it'll totally make that a non-factor. But if they limit it and make it so it's always kind of unexpected, so if it's a Decepticon episode, you're like, will Mech show up? Or if it's a Mech episode, will the Decepticon show up? And having that mystery factor kind of hovering in the air adds a little bit of tension as well to the action sequences, which I enjoy. Gog, did you have anything else you want to bring up?
Yeah, the I'd say one thing that I wish was... towards the end when they show... They're wondering, the trailer exploded, but there's no signs of radiation. What happened? And then they do the flashback showing, the big reveal of... Well, they put it on the train. And I was like, oh, I thought you already showed us that. Because it showed Bumblebee, knocking on the train car. And I'm like, okay, cool. They switched it to the train. And then it shows them driving out.
They went back and they're like, elaborate,
yeah. Yeah, and then it was like they didn't expect any of the viewers to know what happened. And it's like, oh, right. No, the trailer exploded. And everybody's like, what happened? And then it zooms into Fowler's eye. And it's like, well, what they did was RC handed the box to Bulkhead. And Bulkhead put it in the train. And Bumblebee waved at the dude. And then they transformed and drove out of the cave. And I'm like, it would have been cooler if they just had entered in the cave, and then Bulkhead blew the door, and then you see Mech, like, what happened? And then they drive out of the cave, and then they're like, well, let's go get it. But the fact that they showed Bumblebee crawl on the train and wave to the human, we already knew. So maybe that was the benefit of the younger audience, but I think it would have actually benefited from less footage in that first... first tunnel sequence.
Totally.
Because that, there's like, what a twist! And the twist totally fell short because you already showed us that.
Yeah, because that kind of thing, you're supposed to, when you do that properly, the train isn't even supposed to be a factor. You're just supposed to think of it afterwards going, oh, that's what they did. All they did on that scene was cut out 3 seconds.
Yeah, because until Bumblebee jumped on the train, even when he jumped on the train, it wasn't until I saw him, literally knock on the side of the train that to me, I was like, well, the train's just a piece of scenery. It's just, you know, it's being used for whatever they're doing. And he knocks on it. I'm like, oh, they know someone in the train. The whole thing has opened up now to what's going on. So it was kind of funny. It's like, I almost imagine Fowler, like if you're going to break the fourth wall, like after that whole thing, when you zoom into his eye, zoom back out of his eye, he's like waggling his eyebrows, going like, bet you guys didn't expect that. Whole audience is like, we knew it. And he's just like, shut up. I don't know.
Well, even if it wasn't correctly done, at least, you know, animation wise, it was, because even for like a split second, there is a spot where you can see like RC getting the dingus ready for handoff.
Mm.
You know, it just lasts for a split second, but it does add a little bit to it. So incorrectly done, but at least correctly animated.
Mm-hmm. Omegas, was there any other points that you'd like to bring up?
Let me see. Once again, my jumbled little list of things here. pretty much everything, unless yet again touching on Cullen's acting performance in this episode.
Yeah, I was really enjoying his discussions with Fowler to a degree, because they didn't feel like him from the first five episodes. They felt like a much better Cullen performance.
Yeah,
he wasn't going like Agent Fowler. That right. was unnecessary. Honking my horn. Like, he was actually having a somewhat conversational tone to a degree. And I like that now the stiltedness I hear in Prime's voice feels utterly intentional. Like Prime speaks in a very formal manner, and it seems like that's actually an intention rather than a carryover of delivery of movie lines.
Well, yeah. Yeah, that's a nice little element to have. I actually have this written down in my notes as the return of dramatic Prime. But it's the dramatic Prime I kind of wish they had in the five-parter. Because it is limited. It's not over the top. It does, you know, there is emphasis to what he's saying. You know, when he's talking about, we've discovered humans that Earth's, you know, Decepticons here on Earth in human skin.
Mm-hmm.
Which, again, to hear him talk about human skin is disturbing.
It's movie
prime. Mostly your fault.
Hey.
It was appropriately dramatic. Let's call it that.
The best part of Prime in this entire episode was the epic growl as he slows the train. It was almost on the level of Darth Vader at the end of episode 3. And I was like, whoa, this dude is going animalistic. Like, I don't know. I got a really good kick. And it wasn't Darth Vader in the sense that it was just ridiculous where you're laughing at it. At least not to the same degree, but it was, whoa, like that Prime is unleashing the beast within to slow this thing down. Oh, that growl was language. Crazy. I want to see a video of Cullen doing that into the microphone, because that growl was something, man.
The body language that was too. When he's pulling the train back, like with that growl and the camera shake, and then he's just like, his heels aren't just dug in; his heels are like 10 feet under the ground as they're like scraping through, trying to stop this thing. And I was like, okay, I am now fully in tune with the idea that this is difficult for him to do.
That's up to the animation. Well, of course, 10 feet into the ground is digging in for a 40-ton robot.
No, yeah. I always want to briefly bring up the whole time that I was hearing the dialogue for this episode, I would swear, like I could swear that the entire reason that they were protecting a thing called the Dingus was just so that all the voice actors would have even more trouble delivering their lines without laughing. Because they'd have to constantly go like, sir, the dingus is ready! Or like, we've got to protect the dingus. Like, there's it felt a whole lot like some kind of writer in-joke. Aside from it being a very funny word to say.
Yes.
And I'm sure, and this is one where I would totally not argue, but I'm sure that there are some folks out there who got very frustrated by the word dingus. You know, all I can do is extend my hand and say, I'm sorry, but dingus.
It was obviously a code word. You don't want to call it super secret radioactive experimental energy supply as you're transporting it. So, especially over the radio, but... I wouldn't mind seeing this show up again. Not as a plot point of someone trying to steal it, but maybe during the experimentation of using this experimental energy source that it yields some sort of result, and then it shows up again, even if it's only in the background. Like, yeah, we created this super weapon, and it's being powered by the dingus, or just something. Yeah. Just something mentioning it, I'd get a kick out of it, I think.
I'm starting to see a merger of ideas here, where maybe if we're reverse engineering a transformer, it could be powered by the dingus that the transformers protected.
This whole time, though, I'd really love it if the name dingus continued to get like a one-line strange reaction each episode it's mentioned. Like, I loved RC's just really brief line in this episode of like dingus. And they didn't even really follow up on it. It's just like the dingus. And so, like, it would be great if the dingus shows up again. So it was like, we've upgraded the dingus to power this new weapon, and then someone in the background's like, dingus. And then, like, no one brings it up. But just, I always gotta have someone in the background, just underneath the rest of the score, it's going like, dingus. I can't think of anything else I really want to bring up myself, outside of the dingus. Gog, do you have anything else?
Yeah, I guess really the last thing in my notes that we haven't talked about yet is I want to mention the animation, and I want to mention some positives and some negatives this time. Mm-hmm. Like, I think this show is doing such a good job with subtlety, at least to way more than I expected. It's certainly not million-dollar blockbuster animated movie stuff, but for for a weekly animated show, it's really good. And I just like the subtlety. The actors seem to be putting a lot of love into making these characters, both human and robot, seem alive and organic. Like at the end shot, after the train is stopped, you have Prime kind of looking up and pondering the whole thing. And then in the background, you see like Miko punch Jack's arm, and then and then Jack kind of holds his arm for a minute, and then they give each other a high five, and they're playing this little like high five, like I can, you know, we'll slap your hand in different ways or whatever and punch each other. And all that stuff is going on in the background while the camera is obviously focused on Prime. And they're doing such a good job of that. And the static shots of them standing in a room and talking are really, really good. But I will say, though, that a lot of the action still seems to really be stiff. It's like, even going back to the Wheeljack episode from last week, I'd like to see the animation improve with fight scenes, because it does kind of, it just seems to be a little stiff and not as dynamic, I think, but
Yeah.
And so, I don't know.
I have a pro and con about the fight scenes. The con is, I think this episode really illustrated it well, is that I find that Prime, if it had a trope for its fight scenes, it's that often one robot will start running at the other one, then the one being ran at will start running at the one running at him. And then they'll have a panaway shot, and it's like, they're running at each other. To Prime's credit, they then zoom in and show at least one impact after the two sides clash. But I definitely don't think, like, I'm sure you're not implying this, but I don't think the fight scenes are poor in any way. But I do agree that, especially given the rest of the growth that the series has shown so quickly in four episodes since the premiere, bringing the fight scenes up a notch too would be fantastic.
I don't think there's any doubt that this stuff is going to improve as it goes on. It's still a fairly early show. Honestly, if I had it any other way, I don't know if I had to choose between better fight scenes or more organic subtlety during the non-fight scenes, I think I'd leave it the way it is, because I really like what we've gotten so far, and it's not so bad where there's just constant fighting on the screen. So I still look at these things and believe that I feel that they exist naturally when I look at it. It's not like Cybertron where it's just static models that are just doing keyframe animations or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
But it feels a little like that during the fight scenes.
I agree with your wanting to have the, if you had to pick a balance, having it as it is now, Because when you say Cybertron, I think that if they went, like, let's make the fight scenes look good and let's not work as much on the idle stuff or the conversations, that's what would make it feel a lot more like Unicron Trilogy, where when the robots aren't fighting, they're just standing around gesturing lightly and talking to each other. And then the fight scenes are where everything happens. So I...
Right. Yeah, I do prefer, if they're going to go for a balance issue here, then they're definitely going in the right direction, focusing on the small details, the things that bring the characters to life, rather than the ones that are just meant to go, ooh and ah, look at the pretty fight scenes. But I actually, if they have to go with these kinds of fight scenes, you know, the fist-to-fist, you know, these stiff melee fights, I at least prefer that over something that became a cliche. You talk about Cybertron, something that became a cliche during that trilogy, which was two sides statically standing opposite of each other, just shooting for 10 minutes straight.
And then the two leaders punch each other's fists together.
Exactly.
And then there's a huge explosion.
Yeah. I guess just to sum up what... I'm sure I've made my point already, so... But just to sum it up in one sentence, I would say that the non-fighting animation looks wholly and unexpectedly organic, and when it goes into the fight sequences, I think a lot of that organic feel is lost fairly quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'd like to see that change.
Yeah, definitely. And like you said, it's incredibly likely that as the series goes on, the fight scenes will likely improve. But yeah, the fact that this show is actually putting the effort into like the subtleties of when they're standing around and conversing, it makes such a difference, especially when I think back on stuff like Cybertron. Like, imagine if in Cybertron you could see where they were looking, for instance, or you could see what they were thinking through their head movements. That would have been so cool. Omegas, did you have any other points you wanted to bring up?
I think that's it. Like I think the last thing on my note list here, and I'm not quite sure why I wrote it down, but Wingnut, Dingbat, and Sky Guy.
I'm hoping that's the next Minicon 3 pack we get.
Oh yeah, I would so buy a Sky Guy.
Dude, those could be the names they use for the Erraticons if they ever do toys, and they have to give them names.
Oh yeah,
Sky Guy.
Sky Guy.
I did get a kick out of that. It did seem to be a little bit of meta humor, like. Like, yeah,
what do you guys call yourselves, anyway?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I like that it was Fowler who said it, too, because, you know, he's been dealing with them, clearly, since before the show, and I just love that he's like, yeah, those Decepticons, like, Sky Guy. I'm hoping that there's some Sky Guy fan art.
Yeah, hopefully they'll do, like, the movie, like, with how they made a stratosphere out of the plane that they flew on, which obviously wasn't a Transformer.
Right.
In Revenge of the Fallen, but like hopefully we'll get a transforming Prime helicopter, and they'll just call him Sky Guy. Like, who shot me down, Sky Guy?
Well,
yes. As a matter of fact, yes, yes. Here he is.
Personally, I want that rusty truck as Dingbat. I think that's a perfect name for him.
That rusty truck is cool. I kind of hope that gets if they're going to start pulling from vehicles.
Radicons, we have Hubcap. Just
make
just
us giving Dingbat.
You the idea. Yes,
Dingbat. Yeah, I think I'm about out of points that I really want to bring up. Except for again, I'll say it. This is for you, Aaron. Prime's trailer had a stripe on it.
I like design of that trailer too. I hope he uses it again sometime.
I really like the ridge
because it wasn't just a box. I like the shape
yeah.
of it. It was really cool.
And it had an Autobot symbol on the stripe. Because at first I was like, "Hey, it's a stripe," and I looked closer and I was like, "If there's an Autobot symbol on there," and again at one point you see the trailer walls kind of folding down in on themselves. I was like, maybe that is some Cybertronian tech. Except that he ditched it and it exploded. I just realized. Maybe he has another one. Anyway, if we have nothing else to drop in, I guess that's a good point to call it at. So, thank you everybody for listening to another Prime Time. Hope that you've been enjoying these. And if you have friends or acquaintances who are watching Prime or had watched Prime and were put off by, for instance, like something in the five-parter, I would almost go so far as to say, if you really want to win him over, point him to an episode after the five-parter and point him to one of our primetime podcasts. See if that can help him get into the show at all, if there's even a chance. If it doesn't work, then whatever. But I'm mostly saying this because there are a number of people I've talked to over the last couple of weeks, and when I brought up Prime, they were like, oh man, I didn't like the five-parter, so I haven't kept up with it. And I found myself constantly going like, and I felt weird saying it because this is such a cliche thing to say when you're trying to stick up for a show. I was like, well, it gets better after the premiere. And so I was like, this is such a, it's, I was thinking of for the next one, once we're 10 episodes into the series and we have basically a non five-parter series of five episodes to compare to the opening five-parter, it'd be interesting to look at how far the series has come in just that much time.
I don't think that's ever unfair, though. And for people who watch television, I don't think that that's anything new as far as saying, like, well, yeah, the first couple episodes, it's kind of a slow burn, but once you get a few in, it really starts kicking off. Mm-hmm. That's the case with a lot of shows, and I don't think that anyone would kind of wrinkle their nose when you would say that and be like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
So... because I get told that all the time, and it's just something you accept.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a new show, sometimes it takes a while to get the ground. You can't introduce every cool concept and hit the ground running right from the start. So
I think it's also it's worth mentioning, to Prime's credit, and perhaps also to its detriment, it opened with a five parter and not like a two or a three parter. So that was five episodes of content that were kind of pushed to get done up front. And that, I think that might have entered into it for some folks who got turned off as well. But if you're enjoying Prime, you know, don't hammer the issue. But make sure you tell people who might have been put off by the opener that the show has quite clearly improved since then. And much to its credit. That's been one of my favorite parts of these four episodes we've seen so far. It's seeing all the improvement. But anyway, that's me trying to tell listeners to get more people to listen to Primetime. Tune in again when we cover whatever the next episode's called. I don't actually know the title of it. This has been Vangelis, that's been Gog, and that's been Omegas Prime. And we are Prime out!